The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Alright, there's only one place to start, Cheddar, and that is that Greg Kennedy has been hit with a 4-week suspension for what happened in the Kilkenny game. So we all know about this at this stage, and we were comparing it last Monday to Davy Fitz coming on the field interfering, and he got 8 weeks. You know, Kennedy comes in, and for me, just as bad an infraction, while he didn't get physical with a player, but he completely got involved in the game. So he's only getting involved, or he's only been slapped with a 4-week suspension. So, like, I mean, I thought that was pretty interesting. Do you think 4 is too weak for him, or do you think that's a fair?
I thought it was about fair, but to be honest with you, Willie, I didn't think of the other incident with Davy. But I would just deem interfering with a player and that being more serious. Look, that can lead to obviously much greater issues in the course of a game. I think 4 weeks is enough, but look, it brings it back to something completely different. You know, I suppose, why are people out there in the first place? And as a manager, I'll probably talk against myself here in a minute. Look, it was a clever piece of work from Greg in the first instance.
And cheated, we said, which he did.
That's what he did, like. But, you know, if he was your Mayor Fern and you were on the sideline and there was an opportunity to stop the goal here and he didn't do it, well, you'd have a fairly cross words with him as well coming off the sideline. So, look, it was wrong, first of all, and it's against the rule and, you know, shouldn't be there. I don't think, you know, if he had been given instructions or something like that, but I don't think that was even the case. Now, I wasn't at the match, I was just looking at it on the TV. I don't think that was the case. So there's, you know, there's very little to back up his case here in this instance. But look, I think 4 weeks is enough for it. It wasn't going to be free anyway. Sorry, I think that's the key point in it.
The ref wasn't looking.
The ref wasn't going to allow that anyway. You know, so it didn't actually stop a goal as such.
Yeah, but he was standing in front of him to make sure that wasn't going to happen anyway.
He definitely meant what he wanted to do.
But
yes.
It made me think, because Eamon Fitzmaurice was tweeting about this during the week, and he says, "While Greg Kennedy incident has brought matters to a head this week, it was no huge shock to me, as Mayor Fuerner role has been exploited for some time, as every team, including ourselves, has sought to push its limits." He says, "Tony McEntee was a great man to spot and fill space on an opposition kickout as he slowly withdrew from the pitch, disrupting the goalkeeper's appreciation of space. Jo is a good man to drag his backside when required as well." And it just got me thinking that I was a little bit naive. It never really dawned on me. You just see them running in and out and you'd be concentrating on the game and you wouldn't really be. But if they're trying to put goalkeepers off quick puck outs and they're taking their time getting off the field, say on the side of a field that there's loads of space. Is there any need for these lads anymore, Cheddar? Like, I mean, tell me about the value of them from a manager's point of view.
I know, I think there's good value in it. It's very difficult to make this work. And look, the rule doesn't really work, because I think the rule is you have to come in, first of all, from the middle of the field. So if you want to go into your full forward, you're running, I don't know what it is, 90 yards to get into him, 90 metres to get into him, and just think of the time that takes.
And right across the field.
And right across the field. And you've got to do it in a break and play when there's a free being taken. Or something like that. And look, just think of that for a minute. The free's been taken, then the goalkeeper wants to puck out the ball quickly and he can't because there's somebody out in the field. So it's difficult to see how the thing can work if we're going to allow it in the first place. Back then, if it's Morris, it happens an awful lot more than Mayor Fern is. I've seen teams using their hurley carriers or water carriers to walk onto the field and just put a presence in the open area where a goalkeeper tries to put his puck out and that type of stuff. Look,
that's gamesmanship. I'm less critical of that. Like, it's obviously against the rules.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing at the end of the day.
Similar.
You know, it's the same thing, Willie, at the end of the day. I mean, you're trying to stop the goalkeeper from putting the puck out where he wants to put it.
Yeah.
And look, I don't really have a difficulty with that. You know, in life, there's legislation and rules there, and everybody's trying to bend them, and no different than in Gaelic games. And look, you take every opportunity you can, I suppose. It's not right. It's gamesmanship. But I suppose any supporters, if their team is doing it and gains an advantage, then it's great. If the other team is doing it and they gain an advantage, then we're all, you know, screaming blue murder and so on. This is life as such. But look, it does happen, not a huge amount, but it does happen. Even the club matches, it's happening now.
Yeah, but I was thinking the only people that would miss these fellas are actual manager. Because I don't think players really, like, you're under pressure, you're trying to mark your man, there's a puck out coming, and there's a fella coming in trying to give you... I know my reaction would be, yeah, go on, stop. You know, you don't really have time for that.
I think that may be the case in previous years, but I think with the way the systems is going now, I think getting information into the field is very important. And I've had this discussion before. Actually, more important is the information that's taken off the field, what the players are giving you.
Yeah.
And I looked at something a couple of years ago myself. I think this will work in hurling. I think football has a problem here, because certainly we can mic up hurlers, similar to the AFL quarterbacks and that, and you can talk to them, you know, you can talk to your key players, let that be 6 or 11 or whatever, you know, whatever you deem to be your leaders in the field. We can certainly look at technology to do all of this if that's what's needed. Of course, there's lots of legislation and all that around these things as well that you need to get right. But you know, just as a related point, I think hurling could fix the issue with technology. Football's obviously be a little bit more difficult. One point I would make, Willie, I think I would allow medical people on the field. Clearly, they're well signed now. The doctor and the medical people, you know, they've got good bibs. It's very, very easy to know who's who. I would allow them on at any time, regardless. I don't think the referee is needed to call them on now. I stand corrected on that. But if a player gets injured in any shape or form, and particularly if it's a concussion injury, you know, do not wait for the referee to stop. Get on the field and assess your player. So that's the one, I think, the one area that, you know, everybody, GM, management, players, supporters, everybody will be happy enough to see.
And can Hurley fellas come on the field? Or I thought the Hurleys were lined up along the side of the field and you could just throw them into them rather than actually get in there.
No, there's a certain rules around that as well. I think if the weight breaks and plays and all of that as well. No, that's quite... look, at county level, that's quite tight. That's why I'm surprised and, you know, linesmen are very, very vigilant on that. Even where you stand, I mean, there's certain positions. Look, here's some of the advantages, and, you know, it has happened myself where the opposition hurley carrier place themselves beside your management team for obvious reasons. You know, and sometimes you have to run them up the field and that, you know. So look, everybody's trying to take advantage here. That's the bit of crack about the game, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. But it's an interesting one. But any Mayor Fuerna that runs on the field and gets involved in the tactics of the two teams and places themselves or talks to any players or physically interferes with players or positions themselves, they can't. I'm nearly all for just getting rid of these lads. I think the cons outweigh the pros at this stage for the game, and it's all a bit messy the way they're running in, and you said, when you have to go in from the middle, like by the time you get across and by the time then the play starts and you're trying to get off, and it's a terrible mess. I think
it would be a good discussion, to be honest with you. I think, you know, we've obviously moved on a step with the Mayor of Fuerna. I think that came in sometime around, I don't know, 2007 or 8 or sometime around then anyway. I think a discussion on that. Incidentally, you know, you brought up the Hurley carriers there. I think they're much more important. You know, you can imagine if you're a cornerback in the team and you're Blake or Hurley, and the Hurley carrier doesn't run into you to give you your spare Hurley, and suddenly a goal goes in. Well, you know, you'd have fairly serious words with your Hurley carrier. Didn't give a damn whether the referee called you in or he didn't. You know, so I think maybe that's a little bit more important. I think you could look at it again. I think that could be reviewed again. But I wouldn't like to blow it out of all proportion either. You know, Greg didn't assault any player, get on to any player, with exception of Brian, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was as serious an incident as interfering with the player. I take a point, interfering with the player, interfering with the referee or anything like that's a very different thing. It's a sort of a personal thing, really. So I wouldn't blow it up too much.
Yeah.
I think maybe the four-week thing will sort it out.
Maybe, yeah. And it's not blowing it up too much. I just thought the Eamon Fitzmaurice tweets given an insight into what the kind of dark arts did. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about that too much before, you know, so it was kind of like news to me. Come here, John Conlon was talking before the Waterford game, and he says, we get 2 weeks off, and for the last 6 weeks, we just focused on Waterford totally and coming down to put a massive performance in Walsh Park. And it just got me thinking that after the league, players have 6 weeks to focus in on one game. And then they come out after winning that game on the Monday and have another game 6 weeks later. So mentally, like, I presume management teams will look ahead to the four games and be well planned ahead.
Yep.
But players are told absolutely one game at a time. If players' mind starts drifting to the following week, now I know Clare have 2 weeks off, but the likes of Tip and all these teams are playing again this weekend. It's like, it must be really difficult psychologically for players, and we know visualisation and all these things come into it. So you have 6 weeks to mentally prepare yourself for one game, and then you have 6 days to prepare yourself for the next one. Isn't it a weird dynamic?
Yes, it is. And as you described it, it is how it would happen. You know, a management team would plan ahead for absolutely everything, and even in the sense of the type of team themselves and that they might need 6 days later, whereas the player will just focus on the game and then he'll be appraised of what comes up 6 days later. Look, there's some, I'd rather, I suppose, medical people to give the definitive view on this, but there's a lot of, I suppose, medical science around, what you can remember, and I think there's some things around that, you remember most of what you have learned for an hour after that. Certainly after a day after that, you lose most of that memory. And I think there's some medical statistics as well around that. I think at best you can maybe remember 6 or 7 key pieces of information. After that, you just don't retain it anymore. And there's some interesting, I must have read somewhere, there's some interesting things of the time of the day that you should receive that information that you can, hold on to the memory and that as well. So just to get back on your point, Willie, look, the 6 weeks that you're leading into it, obviously it's an important game to start, but it's likely that your system is not going to change a huge amount. You're not going to throw out the system on round one with a very different one in round two. You'll tweak it maybe for the opposition, whatever the case may be. So what you've learned in the 6 weeks for round one will serve you good in 2, 3 and 4 rounds as well. And you'll have an awareness of the opposition at that stage. I think we spoke about this. John Kiley made a comment on it last year. It's 90% preparation of your own team and 10% awareness of the opposite. And look, that's the sports psychologist's view on things.
Right.
I think what John was saying is actually right, but it's actually right in science in that as well.
Yeah, okay. Right, well, Tipperary are bucking the trend. So Liam Sheedy, the easy thing for Liam Sheedy to do would be to have come in to a squad who's hitting 27, 28, 29, 30 and coming off an under-21 All-Ireland and completely rip up the script, as a lot of managers do. Say you're focusing on youth, buy yourself 2 or 3 years and there you are. So you would be saying we're looking to peak now in year 3. So immediately by bringing in the young lads, you've bought yourself that time. He didn't do that. Now, Noel Connors was interviewed earlier this year and he was saying, now you have lads retiring at 28, 29, 30 and it's down to the mileage and demands placed on the body. I don't think you'll have too many lads in the next few years who'll play much beyond 8 years at Intercounty because of the demands on the body. Michael Fennelly has said last year, if I was still playing, it'd be a nightmare for me. It's a younger man's game. I see the age gap going down more. Even 28, 29 is getting a bit old now. Then on the back of these comments, Limerick win the All-Ireland with an average age of 23.6. So Liam Sheedy, all the signs were you have an under-21 All-Ireland team, you've got a team 28, 29, 30 with a lot of mileage on the clock who have underperformed for the last 2 years. Isn't it an incredible achievement for him and his motivational ability to have gotten Tipperary at the pitch they were last Sunday? I didn't think they could get to that again. He deserves a huge amount of credit. Their average age of their 15 last weekend was 27.5, which is higher than any of the last 10 All-Ireland champions. Or champions the last 10 years?
I think there's a number of points in that. First of all, you have to give Liam a lot of credit for getting the whole team and getting the system and all of that right on the day. It's a very, very difficult thing to do, as I've said a number of times. But there's a lot of points in that, Willie, and I'll just deal with some of them. It has nothing to do with age. And I think Noel's comment was just a general comment as such. And I'd probably much prefer, the medical people. I would like to give a definitive view on this because I may be wrong, but I'd certainly like to talk to the medical people or the conditioning people around this. It has nothing to do with age. And in some instances, it may be an injury issue, a medical issue, but we don't know whether that's been overload from the training of the last 6 years, or we don't know whether it was family history, DNA history, or we don't know whether it was due to a contact injury or something like that. There is some medical reports on this. I remember if, maybe only a year or two ago, I think somebody in Whitfield and Waterford done a, you know, one of the surgeons there done some reports on this. I think DCU have done some reports on it as well. So I wouldn't like to just second guess this, but I'd be pretty sure that a lot of the reasons that people are sort of pulling out of 28, 29, first of all, just think where society is going. A lot of, no, an awful lot of hurlers now are going to third level college. So in their earlier years, they have plenty of time on their hands, little financial pressure as such, although it's not easy. So they're able to hurl away. And then suddenly 23, 24, they probably come into their first job. And then 27, 28, they're probably looking at their first promotion. And to get the promotion, they're going to probably have to do extra study or, take on an extra degree or whatever the case may be. But that was fine when you're 21, 22, it is full time. When you're 27, 28, you're now doing it while you're working.
Yeah, and you have a mortgage then too.
And you have a mortgage. And that's the other thing. It's an economic issue most of the time, I think, Willie, to be honest with
now,
you.
Now, interestingly enough, Brian Hogan in the goals is the only Tipperary player that's still in college. So they all have these pressures. So been able to balance their life work sport balance and been able to organise all that. And based on the fact that if what we're saying is right here, if what you're saying is right, they're in that 27, 28, 29, 30 category where their head might be getting turned by life issues rather than hurling issues. So
No, they may very well be. And look, here's where the real gold dust is going to happen. I mean, we commented on semi-professionalism. And I might make another comment on that at the end of this piece, Willie. We commented on that. This is where the real gold dust comes in. So you look at your panel, you see the needs of all of the players. It may very well be that somebody is building his house or you need to do it yourself to save the money and that, or you may be buying your house or something like that. A supporters club, not looking financially, but maybe able to help you out in some other way, of taking the pressure off of you like that. Or if it's study or something like that, they may be able to do some things to help you out. Incidentally, it was interesting to see Limerick have certainly squared a circle here in terms of the development and development squads and all of that. They've had a fantastic development plan in place for a number of years. Now I see where they're partnering with LIT. And that's a really, really interesting topic because, and Willie, you probably could comment on this better, maybe better than me, but, region 23, 24 or whatever, or even, sorry, region 18, development squads look after you very well up to minor, but there's a bit of a gap between, we'll say, 17, 18 and maybe 21, 22. What college do you want to go to? What's the study programme? Is it suitable for you? Is there a job available to you in the future? Is it in your own city?
Yeah.
So I can see huge benefits here with Limerick, and Limerick have definitely stepped up the game here. Cork have had that with UCC for a while. Waterford have it with WIT. Turles probably have it with Turles IT and that. So they're definitely stepping up the pressure on other counties here, how they look after their players.
Yeah, I was wondering actually how that partnership would work. So I presume it is that career development and career advice so that you're happy in your personal life when you get up to the senior squad and stuff. And that's huge, isn't it?
It's absolutely massive. You just think of who you're dealing with. You're dealing with people with these are doctorates. They're gone past degrees and masters. These are really, really crucial people who can advise you on things and, give you very expensive advice. So I think it is absolutely huge. It's a huge bonus to have, particularly for a young team coming through. Because, look, these are life things.
Huge decision, your career, that you have to make at 18, when, in my case, without any real help in your school.
Correct.
You're making it on your own and you're picking things kind of willy-nilly. But yeah, that's a good point. What did you want to say on the semi-professionalism before we move on?
It's funny, I was just thinking of that point after, Willie, and I think I made the point that I think maybe full-time professionalism would work and would probably be better than semi-professionalism. Now it's going to attract a huge amount of issues. Would the GAA go with it and rent out their grounds and all of that? But if you look at soccer or look at any of the major sports, team sports, or even if you look at music, there was a time that, bands and all of those depended on the number of records to sell. To actually make the money to be able to sustain the product as such. And, similar with the soccer in England and that, the teams with the biggest followings and the biggest stadiums depend a lot on footfall going into their stadiums to be able to sustain their teams. But if you look at hurling, you're going to have Cork, obviously, Limerick, Tipperary, a massive county with a massive following, Waterford with the city, Kilkenny with the city. I know Galway's hurling's more East Galway than the city. Dublin has a city. So it might actually work, if it were, if you know, if somebody decided to go full-time hurling and have a guru to be able to take over teams and that and be able to get alignment with, you know, with GA and with everybody else and got all of these things, as they say down the country, got all the ducks in a row about this, it may very well suit hurling more than football because of you know, the population, where population is based and that in terms of support.
Not having that, Cheddar. I'm not having that. I'm not. You're getting enough glory in May and June now with the Munster and Leicester.
I'm only throwing it out
you're
there
getting
now,
paid now as well. No, I'm cutting that off. I'm not allowing that. That's not going to happen. Right, we'll come back and we'll look at the matches.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in there. I don't know. It was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
So we'll start with Limerick Cork here in part two, Cheddar. And this is, it's a huge game, really. It's Cork could be out, pretty much, right? If you lose two games, I can't see Limerick or Tip losing two games, if we're being honest about it, or Clare. Like, I mean, it's hard to see some of the stronger teams. John Kiley was talking during the week. He says, you only have to go back to last year when you saw the challenge both teams put up against each other, whether it was down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh or above in Croke Park. And that's fair. There wasn't a puck of a ball between the two of them last year. Now, on the evidence of last week, Cork have slipped down from the standards of last year, and of the evidence of the league, Limerick have kind of raised it up a little bit.
Look, it's difficult, I suppose, Willie, to figure out Limerick. You know, we've seen that with some teams. Look at Tipperary. You know, can you use that same evidence before last Sunday and post last Sunday?
Yeah.
Because certainly Tipperary didn't show that type of performance in the league at any stage. So I think it is more to do with the setups of the teams and that. And, you know, what I'm really interested in looking at, you know, Limerick had a very defined system of play last year, which was very, very successful and very, very difficult to break down and suited the type of players that they have. But it'll be interesting if, you know, they'll obviously want to tweak that a little bit and do something different. You need to bring something different to the table here because, you know, all over the winter, the John Milers and Daleem Sheedys and all of that will be planning, well, you know, how are we going to take down Limerick here? And particularly with a team that's playing to such a defined system with, you know, so many key players in it, you know, you need to figure out either your system is going to just overrun theirs or you're going to counter-tactic what they're doing. So I think that's going to be interesting. And I wonder a little bit if that's what Limerick were doing right throughout the league. And, you know, are they going to come out next Sunday with, you know, something slightly different? Because I thought last year Seamus Flanagan, from the very first time I saw him in the league below in Thurles against Tipperary there one night, he was actually on James Barry, and his movement around the field was definitely there was a purpose to it and there was a productivity about it, and he's, in my view, he's the crucial cog in the Limerick system at the minute. You might talk about two wing forward stepping back and so on, but he's the actual person that makes things work for them. But strangely enough, throughout the league, even though I know he was unavailable for some games, but there was other times that he didn't make the team, and they seem to be looking at the likes of Peter Casey and Shane and different teams now. So I'll be very interested to see. And, you know, bear in mind that, you know, I give Paul Kinnear a huge amount of credit and Alan Cunningham and definitely John Kiley as well, but particularly Paul in the setup of the team and the way they play and the roles for each player and all of that. And he's a lot of experience with Clare in 2013, went with a particular system with Davey, came in 2014 and came up a little bit short. And I'm just wondering, you know, has he already thought out, you know, something different? Not a huge amount different, but something different to throw the Corks and Tipperary's and everybody else off their tails this year. I think he'll have to, but I'll be interested to see what that is.
Yeah, definitely. So how can Cork disrupt them then? So Cork were a little bit all over the place at the back against Tipperary. So Bill Cooper obviously was a big loss. He could have filled in at centre-half back while Tim Matney dropped off, and maybe Dara Fitzgibbon would have had more licence to go forward. We don't know if Dara Fitzgibbon had a quiet game, or was it because of Bill Cooper he had a quiet game? Their forward line didn't function outside of probably Shane Kingston and Patrick Horgan. Conor Lee Hahn was in the corner, which he's not a corner forward, then with that wing forward. You can just point out so many things that they weren't, how they didn't look good the last day. So, like, obviously the two big issues, you mentioned Flanagan, their half forward line and their half back line. So Hannan and Dermot Burns like to drop off their men and cover their full back line. So surely Cork have to put Lee Hahn On the half forward line, along with Harnady and Daniel Kearney, and put manners on them if they want to drop off.
Yeah, but you have to think back to last year, Woolley, and probably for the last couple of years. Not now. I probably would separate last year, Limerick last year, the last 2 years with the Limerick of maybe the last 20 years. But Cork generally have the edge on Limerick. Even last year they had the edge in them in Croke Park. So the Cork...
And in the league this year.
Cork's method of play causes Limerick problems. And their quickness to go front foot and the protection of possession and strike to hand and that is very, very impressive. They just didn't do it well last Sunday. And there was a couple of little things about that. You know, sometimes when you go very creative and very possession-driven, sometimes you mightn't work as hard on the basis of the game. And I just thought that the Cork defence didn't defend well last Sunday, but certainly their forwards didn't defend well in terms of the ball coming out. And I think Cork fell into a little bit of a trap then towards the end, put on Aidan and put on Dooley up front, and then they went long and high, and then Cork, and you know, tip-backs, actually, that's what they actually like. But if you look at the first 20 minutes, the way Cork played it, the diagonal ball into the space and the runners into space and the lot of frees that they created, you know, somebody said a tip or cynical, they gave away the free. Now, I don't believe that because it's just too dangerous at the minute to do that. But if Cork go back to that game, so, you know, you can have 6'5" Kyle Hayes, or you could have, I don't care how tall they are, if you're not allowing contested plays to happen, well, then your big players don't get into the game. And I think that's what has happened with Cork. I think that's where they have had the edge over Limerick. I think there's a couple of other interesting sort of subplots to it as well, Willie. Cork's backs are against the wall. I think John Myler said that immediately after the game. You know, bear in mind that if they're to be beaten on Sunday, their last game is against Clare at home in Ennis, and that's, you know, you don't want to be going there to try and get another 2 pints, and that's even hoping that they'll beat Waterford in the third round. So it's, you know, sometimes it focuses the mind very, very quickly about doing the basics well and you know, doing your job well. And Cork have the ability to do that. And I'll probably just go back to your original point about Bill Cooper. He's probably a very untypical Cork player and, you know, has been a little bit maligned, I think, in Cork for any earlier part of his career. But by God, they knew what to miss last Sunday when he wasn't there. You'll rarely see Bill Cooper picking up ball in his own square or picking up ball in the opposition square. He's a 45-45 player, so he protects that area. He's a big physical presence there, organises things around there, which allows Darren Fitzgibbon then to go where he wants to go because there's always a presence behind him. And I just think that they would have fixed, I think he would have probably fixed Bubbles, that free man. He may not have done it himself, but he certainly would have organised that. You know, bear in mind, Tim O'Mahony is a very, very young player and just may not have the presence within the panel to be able to call people to these things. What surprised me a little bit about that was that Tip didn't do anything different last Sunday than what they did in other years. They were fitter, they were quicker, they were certainly more precise on the ball and that. But Noel McGrath has been playing that role for Tip for the last 3 years in terms of stepping out and into midfield and picking up the ball and knocking ball over the bar from distance. So this was just a change of personnel. And I'm just surprised that Cork hadn't it fixed and, you know, weren't able to fix it in the course of the game. And I'm putting it down a little bit that, look, they were dependent on Bill Cooper maybe to pick that up and then pull out Daniel Kearney into the middle of the field and let Tim O'Mahony play that spare half-back. In other words, he's carrying the ball up the field and he's the precision passer. And of course, when Bill Cooper went, they didn't have that type of player on the field then to be able to do
they
that.
They short-circuited, didn't they?
They may have, you know, so the way hurling has gone, Willie, sorry, it's the general point I wanted to make about this. The way hurling has gone, that you could lose one or two key players out of a system like that and you're going to be beaten. And you can be beaten fairly well around the field. That's just the nature of hurling. It's a very dynamic, quick game. And look at the quality of forwards that Tip had. And like any day that they get a high percentage of possession into their forward, and if that's quality possession, look, they'll score, as somebody said, they'd score in a phone box. Every single one of their forwards, it's not just one or two. So I'm not, you know, I don't think that Cork played that terribly badly. I think a couple of things upset them. I think they didn't defend maybe well, just the basics of defending, getting on the ball and that, and they didn't have that punch coming off the half-back line that you normally see with them.
Yeah. Do you think Mark Coleman obviously was very quiet again? It's not unusual for him to be quiet. Do you think with him on the half-back line now, the way the Limerick half-forward line drops deep, he's going to have a free role, so he really needs to start, you know, getting on a lot of ball. He's a brilliant distributor. He can score long range points. He can make a real nuisance of himself now against Limerick.
No, there's no doubt about that. I think that's what they did last year, and particularly long range scoring points. You know, whatever about you processing ball off the half back line, if you're not hurting the opposition, John Kiley won't mind too much. He'll still keep his players back to field and let them run from deep. You know, the two Limerick wing forward, like, they're very, very Garrod Hegarty and Tom Morris in that. You know, they've great range of running and that, and they're able to get back up the field to put pressure on you as well as offering a defensive assistance. But if your half-back is taking the ball and you know, pinging passes, 20-metre passes, maybe to Darragh Fitzgibbon, and he's pinging it over the bar, well, then you've got to do something, because you're going to spill 5 or 6 points very, very quickly in a game like that. And now you're on the back foot instead of being on the front foot. And that's not dissimilar to what happened with Bubbles, you know, scoring from distance. You know, these are very, very accurate players that you just simply have to shut down. You know, you look at any of the 11s at the minute, particularly any that play out the field, Tony Kelly, Bubbles, TJ, my God,
Joe Canning.
You know, are you going to leave him out there and have lads pick them out with a you know, a pick a pass and find them and then let them shoot from distance? You know, it would be a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, no, it definitely would. Do you think Damien Cahillan has a role this weekend, especially with the height and physicality of the Limerick half back line, maybe centre half back? I'm not sure Tim O'Mahony works there, Cheddar. Like, he used to be a forward. He just doesn't seem to have the discipline, and I don't think these games are the games to be learning at new position. Am I too quick to judge him?
I think you are. I think he's a lot of potential. Definitely a huge amount of potential.
He's a great hurler. But, like, I mean, I made this point on Monday. Centre half back was the one position on a football field. Now, it's obviously of a different dynamic that I couldn't get used to. Just, all right, we're stuck for centre back. Woolley, you go in there. Now, this would be for Portlaoise. And you're all at sea because I don't know whether I'm coming or going. Mm. And then you're back out wing back the next game and you don't get another go at centre back. I think you need to be playing centre back coming up through the ranks and to know it inside out. Like, I mean, to be a specialist. He's not a specialist. Now, he's a very good hurler, mm-hmm. and he's a wholehearted hurler, and, like, he does some lovely things. But technically, it's so difficult to play there, and I don't think he has that.
There may be something, and that's even more important for hurling, incidentally. I think there's a little bit in that, Woolley. I think, I mean, I saw Tim playing below in the league match in Kilkenny. I think he will be there. No, he probably has more attributes as a wing back maybe than a centre back, but I think this is a little bit of what happened last Sunday. You know, the Bubble steps out, or Noel McGrath steps out, or TJ, or Tony Kelly steps out in the middle of the field. You can't just hold your position then, because you're going to get bypassed. They're going to put the ball over your head. You've got to step back 20 metres and have somebody cover in front of you. And then, you know, you've got to really hurt them setting up attacks yourself. So you've got to take ball off your cornerbacks, fullbacks, you know, carry the 20 metres and then ping the pass somewhere else. And
he did that a couple of times at the start of the second half.
I think he really has the ability to play that, Woolley. But I think there's a lot of times he was sort of caught at six, and, you know, look, the precision of players now to be able to put the ball where they want to, you can be bypassed really, really easy. So you could be the greatest player in the world, but you're not getting on the ball.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. How do you see this one going? Do you see Cork being able to put it up to Limerick?
No, I do. I think those two factors, I think Cork's backs are against the wall, but it's Limerick's home game as well. And sometimes, you know, it's great to be playing at home, and obviously their first home game, home serious game, probably since the All-Ireland last year. There'll be a huge crowd there and a huge Limerick surprise. And sometimes that can put a little bit of pressure on you as well. But I think there's one other factor. I think if Cork stick to the way they're playing, but, you know, do it better. And I think if Alan Callaghan is playing, is going to tell us an awful lot. I think if they play Aidan or Dooley or some of those players inside, it sort of suggests that they're going to go a little bit long. And I think if they do that, they're playing into Limerick's hands a little bit more. I think John Myler should hold his nerve and just play better the way they were, what they've been doing. Do what they were doing last year. Protect possession. Use it really, really intelligently. A lot of good diagonal runs across the field to open up the space. And the likes of Alan Cadigan obviously is central to that. I'm assuming he was injured last week, and if he was, it's unlikely he's going to be right this week.
He got injured in the last round of the league, didn't he? He got an injury, and I don't think maybe it hasn't come back right. Yeah. But I do take your point that Cork's system doesn't suit Liverpool. Limerick's, because yes. Limerick's system's all about dropping off and covering space, where if you give Cork players space, they'll just ping, ping, absolutely. Ping, ping, and over yeah. the bar. So I do think there's a clash of styles yes, here that is, Limerick yeah. might not like.
I absolutely agree, yeah. And that has shown in that's what it has shown in the games as well. And it'd be interesting to see, do Limerick tweak to counter that, or do they start to change it up a little bit to force Cork to do something different? But I do think Limerick have to change things up a little bit, because when you play with a system like that, clever coaches and managers on the other side are going to be thinking over the winter, well, where am I going to place my players to really cause them a problem? And, the quality of the teams, the quality of the Waterfords and Corks and Tipps and Clares is so high now that, you can really do anything with your team.
Yeah, I think Tipperary showed how to play against Cork, and that's be stuck beside your man and not give them the options for this kind of fantasy, kind of lovely little hand pass and break them down. Because when you have that forward line closed down instead of dropping off, Cork looked like they didn't really run out of options. They got a little bit of space in their full forward line out on the left hand side, but they didn't get too much space in the half forward line.
I wouldn't read it as definitively as that, Willie. I'd have a lot of concerns about the whole tip back line, to be honest with you. I thought in the end Cork played into their strengths a little bit. But I think it's just that Cork need to play at a higher intensity. Their tackling needs to be more intense. Their basics of defending need to be a little bit better. It's a small little bit of everything. It's not just throw out the kitchen sink and let's start again. And I'll be surprised if John does anything different than that. It's just, raising the game, I suppose, raising the bar, that old cliche, all over the field in every position. But I do think that critically, their tackling coming out of the forwards needs to be better. Obviously the defending needs to be tighter in that as well. But, I wouldn't read too much into Tip. I think, there's lads crowning Tip All-Ireland champions already. I didn't see enough to say that anyway. I still think there's concerns in their defence.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So who do you fancy in this Cork Limerick game? Who are you going to go for quickly?
Look, I think if Alan Cadigan is playing, it sort of tells me that Cork are going to go with a particular style. And if that's the case, I think the fact that their backs are to the wall, that they have to produce a performance in every position, might win the match for them. And bearing the history of the last couple of years, I think if it's not, I think Limerick will win it.
All right, okay, great stuff.
So I'm on defence on that.
You are pretty much, yeah, Cheddar. You didn't come down either. You can claim next Thursday you got it right, no matter how it goes, it goes. All right, next up, we'll do Paddy Power predictions.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
Let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right, Paddy Power predictions, and we're going to start with Laois and Antrim in Amore Park at 3 p.m. Cheddar, you were in O'Connor Park. Hugely positive result from a Laois point of view to go to O'Connor Park, run up 4.24. I'm forgetting about what they conceded here to stay positive. But any time you go there and get a win like that, that was huge. On paper, probably the joint most difficult game of the whole group.
Yes, it was a really, really positive performance. And look, they had to dig it out as well. Offaly showed great spirit. Laois had to dig in there to actually get the win. And I think that the latter part will serve them well. It wasn't easy. They certainly looked impressive. Laois's touch in that. They've obviously done a lot of work. Looked very, very good first touch, good movement. Now, you might be a little bit concerned that the score they conceded was a little bit high as well. But look, to score that in O'Connor Park against Offaly on any day, against any Offaly team, is good shooting and good scoring. And they probably missed a good bit. They missed a lot of free. I think they missed 11 wides in the first half, that'll get sharper, I think, as they go along. So, obviously, as a Laois man, delighted with the win, and sets them up really, really well for the rest of the Joe McDonagh. They're playing Antrim, obviously. On Saturday in Port Laois, and they've been close games over the year.
Laois usually win them, though, don't they?
They do, but there's never been a whole lot in them. And now Antrim have won some of them, Molly. There's never been much in it. But I just think that Laois are, and they've a good panel of players, all fit. And I do expect them, you know, you'd want them to push on from here. You know, yeah. You get a win like that, get a bit of momentum behind you, and you want your team then to really go for the juggler here and go for it.
Yeah, so by all accounts, talking to Brian Carroll, Offaly depended an awful lot on high ball tactics, which Laois were well able to figure out and probably expected it. What about Laois? What are we looking at with Laois? Like, I mean, are they mixing up? What kind of style of play are we talking about here?
Just to go back to Offaly, it was a little bit that way, Woolley, all right. I mean, Owen Carl took some puck out to his corner back and he landed him down, into the full forward line. Owen Carl can reach that. He has that range himself, no problem. So you'd wonder why you'd do that.
Yeah.
And look, even just poking it to your corner back allows your defence then to drop 10 metres. By the time the ball's in the air, by the time you get it out to your corner back and he picks it and strikes it, that allows your players 10 metres then to get into the position and that. So you know, and if you're going to go short of that, you need to work it down the field and shoot from distance and then suck out the Laois.
Yeah, there's no logic to that, right?
There isn't really, no. I thought Laois mixed it up well. I thought they picked the pass at the right time and that. You know, maybe some better decisions on that.
Dropping back, lads, back? It doesn't look like they have a half forward line that's going to be dropping back too far. They're playing their six forwards in position.
No, they did. They did. But look, that you might look at that from match to match as well. You know, you wouldn't drop half forwards if you didn't need to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But look, they certainly have some, and even the likes of some young players that are technically gifted, that even didn't start the last day. So I think they have a lot to work with and a lot of quality players to work with and getting performances into Joe McDonagh and building on that, similar to Carroll last year, would be hugely important to the development of the team. They're still quite young and it would be very, very important to the development of the team.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. Who do you fancy here? Laois to shade this one?
I think Laois is at home in that as well, and the momentum, you know, you'd be hoping that they build on the momentum from last weekend and really push on from here.
Okay, great
now,
stuff.
Now, on the other side of that, Willie, I have great regard for Antrim Hurling, and you know, there's a huge interest in Antrim Hurling. The interest in Antrim Club Hurling is probably more than any other county in the country, and you know, sometimes I do be surprised that their county doesn't push on considering what's available within the county, and they had a great win. They had a fantastic win last weekend as well, so they're in the very same position. They'll use that as a launch pad as well to push on.
Yeah, Paddy Power has Laois at 1-2 and Antrim at 15-8, so we'll go with Laois in that one. The other big game of the weekend, obviously, the joint big game, it's at 2 o'clock on RT, is Tipperary and Waterford. Paddy Power of Tip at 2-5 favourites, Waterford 5-2. Before last weekend, those odds, I'm sure, would be a good bit different than that, after Waterford reaching the league final and Tipperary having an under par league. Like we say during the league, Cheddar, you just can't bloody... That's why we don't analyse games during the league. We keep qualifying it by going, you know, we don't know, and you try to talk about teams in general rather than what they're actually doing, because you're right, Tipperary were a completely, completely different team. One thing was interesting, I thought, was Tipperary rotating their forwards, right? And this is an old Eamon O'Shea tactic that wouldn't be like too new, but it definitely had Cork at sixes and sevens, and number one, they shouldn't have been so naive about it, but number two, what do you think Waterford will do if Tipperary do this again? Now, have Waterford got players, should they just stay in their positions and doesn't matter who you're marking, or should, because if you put one or two man markers on men, then the rotation messes up because everyone's confused. So you either go and stay in your positions, you're well able to mark whoever comes on you, or you say follow them. So there's you've really two options, there's no in between, is there?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Look, it depends on the type of player you have yourself, first of all. Look, some players are fantastic in a certain position or on a certain line, and don't perform as well when they have more space or less space. So that depends really, and there's a little bit of that in Waterford, I suppose. You know, Parig has Conor Prunty and Shane McNulty back into the back line.
They can move outside, they're half backs too. Prunty is anyway.
They can, but they're big players in that as well. And you'd wonder with the movement of the likes of John McGrath and that. They probably are well set up for the likes of Seamus Callan and Jason Ford and that. You know, you do need physique to be able to match them. Otherwise, they're just going to bully you off the ball. So I think it's not dissimilar to Cork. You know, Waterford know they've got to perform. And, you know, I've seen Waterford hurl really, really well in Thurles on different days and against different teams. You know, whatever it is, I don't think Welsh Park doesn't suit him. I think it was an Anthony Daly or somebody made a comment. You know, I can't really believe that. I might go back to that point in a minute. I don't think it was to do with the pitch. I think it was to do with the setup of both teams, actually. We might talk about that in a minute. But But I think Waterford have got to step up, and you know, we're, you know, we'll see, I suppose, on Sunday, you know, how far Cork were off the pace of Championship hurling needed at that level. So I think, you know, I think there's not going to be much in it, but I do think that, you know, when Tip get a bit between their teeth and they get that, you know, forceful, intense hurling going, they can be quite difficult to beat, and they just seem to have that at the minute. So you'd probably have to give it to Tip based on what we saw last weekend. But, you know, Waterford have serious panel as well. And, you know, Fives come on last Sunday, again, a quick defender, good quality defender. They have quality there to be able to bring in. And you look, I'd say Parik will have learned from last Sunday. You know, I was surprised to see Tony Kelly being given so much freedom. We spoke about it earlier on. Well, look, the same thing's going to happen with Bubbles next Sunday. Yeah. And, you know, unless in Tipperary try something different. So, you know, they've been forewarned, yeah, about how to fix these things.
So Tadhg De Burca has been playing centre half back. So against Tony Kelly, he didn't really follow him, which is a huge mistake as far as I'm concerned. You're giving the player of the year, a former player of the year, a free role. Nobody wants that. And that's all right maybe in football where you can't score from that distance, but Tony Kelly's just getting on loose ball around midfield and sticking it over the bar from long range. So there's no, I don't think there's any logic, because when you look at it, Austin, there's one thing you're saying, right, when he drops deep, someone else pick him up. But you don't want to give Austin Gleeson that job. You don't want to give Padraig Matney that job, who was really quiet the last day, by the way. And Mikey Kearney just kind of runs, kind of gets industrious himself without picking lads up. So it was confused by at least when Tadhg De Burca used to drop from centre half back under Derek McGrath. You knew someone with that middle third was being swarmed, and you know they weren't going to get handy ball there. But now it looks like Tadhg De Burca is still dropping off, but nobody's collecting his man as much as it used to happen.
I know. I think just from listening to other analyst Woolley, I think Conor Gleeson was to pick him up, and I think when he went, I think there was some error, I think, when there that didn't right. work earlier
Gleeson
on.
Gleeson was marking Colm Galvin.
Correct,
you would have thought he would have had enough on his hands, really, because he's the playmaker. He's kind of a playmaker.
I mean, it would be dropped, but there's no way you'd send Tadhg De Burca out to mark him. But I think what was very interesting that has got very little airtime was the setup of both teams the last day. I think it was the first time that I saw something along the lines of a goalkeeper, two in the full back line. It was like, in, you know, when we look at some of the soccer setups, we look at 4-4, whatever it is, 3-1, or whatever the hell it is. But this looked like something 1-2-1-3-2-1-2-1-2. You know, so there was a real different type of setup on both teams right through up the field.
Yeah.
Whether that was dictated by Clare coming in there, they certainly learned a lot in the league game. Whether that was dictated by Clare or not, you know, we're not going to know, obviously. But, you know, obviously it caused Waterford some trouble to try and you know, change around their resources to actually match that. And sometimes when you try and do that, you're sort of on the back foot already. And, you know, in other words, you're reacting to what they're doing and you don't really want to be in that sort of space. But, you know, somebody remarked about, you know, the Waterford, the Welsh Park being so small that there was no space there. I think it had more to do with the way the teams were set up. There was a lot of space from the 30-metre into the end line on both sides of the field. So that must have told you there was an awful lot of players in the middle third. And I think looking at the setups, you know, it's unusual to see it like that. But I've said this a number of times over the last year, Woolley. I think today I've seen six at the back, two in the middle, and six up front, are over. You know, you're unlikely to see that anymore. You're probably going to see a real dynamic movement of players all over the field with maybe a spearhead up front.
Do you think Waterford are struggling for an identity a little bit? Because they've no long ball option. The two Bennetts don't go up with the hand, they go up with the hurl, and they generally make their runs and they get it out on the wing around the 45-metre line. Hogan is small, so the long ball option is gone. Working the ball through the lines, they can do that, but you wouldn't say that's their identity. Like, I'm struggling to see what the Waterford identity kind of is. Like, they might go kind of wide to the two Bennetts and then they get it out on the wing, and what's the plan from there? You know, because you can't run off someone's shoulder when you're winning it on the wing, so you're kind of stuck with one of them winning it out there and maybe playing it backwards again. And it's, I don't know, I just feel when it wasn't until Maurice Shanahan came on that gave them a focal point. JJ's not on on Monday, wasn't on for starting him, neither was Brian Carroll. I would absolutely start him because he gives you that ball that's going to be won towards the middle of the goals rather than always out in the wings and working through. I'm just struggling to see how Waterford can hurt Tipperary, because we think potentially the vulnerability in their half-back line to pace. Waterford half-forward line doesn't have pace. Their full-forward line doesn't have aerial ability. I'm trying to think how they can hurt Tip.
Go back to your first point, Willie. It's very, very difficult to change the behaviours of 3 or 4 years, and I'm sort of talking about the system of play. But look, at the end of the day, the system of play depends on the way you, the jobs and the roles of your players, and it's very, very difficult to do that. And bear in mind, you know, Watford have been doing that now for 3 or 4 years, and this has been the start of this team. So they've started with this. It's not that they've played something different before that, if you take out the break and some of the older players. And the second point I'd make on that is Ballygunner play somewhere the same way. You know, so there's a lot of players on the panel. They're county champions for the last 3 or 4 years in Waterford. So it's difficult to change to something completely different, let's put it that way. And I think, you know, if you look at Limerick the first year, they struggled to get a different system of play going. And, you know, you could say they were quite average the first year with the same management team in place, and look where they went last year. So it will take time, is the point I wanted to make on this, to come to a definitive way of playing, which is different from what you've done before, but is equally, you know, is a good way of playing. I think they have the quality to do it. You know, the Kevin Moran's the Park man, is the Ozzy Gleason's, and all of those are all quality players who have won things at underage and have confidence to be able to play in big games. I just think it'll take a little bit of time. I do think that, you know, they may not be able to maybe move to the way Cork play. You know, it may be a little bit more traditional. I think of the players to play that. They are big players that can contest ball. And, you know, I take your point about Shane and Stephen that, you know, they're not huge air game players, but they are big players and, you know, physically big players.
Yeah.
And I think it might just take a little bit of time for Pádraig to get the right team on the field to play in a certain way. And, you know, you make the point about, you know, Kearney, you know, how would he fit into that? He obviously didn't fit into Derek McGrath's way of playing. And, you know, Tommy Ryan the same. So they have a number of players that are very quick, you know, fast, skillful players, Tommy Ryan and Kearney, I'm thinking of in particular. And then they have a lot of players that are, you know, bigger players, the two of Bennett's, Ozzy and that are bigger players. You know, so you've got to figure out what's the best team I can put in the field, and what's the system I can play that suits that team the best. And I think they'll need a little while to figure that out.
Yeah, they'll it is going to be interesting. My theory on it is that Michael Kearney, and I've said it before, that he drops into midfield, and he's unfortunately most of the big counties have a centre forward that'll hurt you and gives, like, he gave Jack Brown no questions to ask, so Jack Brown just dropped off him and it's like, let him forage out there. He's not going to hurt us on the scoreboard too much. And I think that just was a big, like, it's a big mistake, because your centre half forward has to ask those questions of the opposition. And while Kearney's industrious and everything, if I was a centre back, I'd be like, I'm letting him go. You know, I have a free role and he's not going to damage us too much.
Yeah, but I think, and I wasn't at the game, Willie. I'd love to be at the game, because it was one game I would have loved to went to do, just to see the tactical, the way they set up and who was picking up who. But I think Kearney would have been actually picking up Shane Amore, maybe more than anybody. But look, you may, because, you know, Watford themselves were going to have Shane McNulty as the spare man in their own full back line. So, you know, in essence, the word Boehm are going to play with a sort of a sweeper. The thing about it is, how are you going to hurt them more than they hurt you? But look, I take your point that, you know, I've seen Kearney play a lot, and I was often wondering why, you know, he didn't nail a full-time place on the team and that. And he's a very industrious player around the field. But if you have that type of player, they probably need to be very productive. And, you know, if you're looking at the ideal for that role, you're looking at Bubbles last Sunday, you know, what did he score? Point from play, from out the field, getting on that type of ball. So you do need to be clinical with the possessions you get, because at the end of the day, you probably are a free man going around those areas.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think Conor Gleeson is nailed on to Mark Noel McGrath anyways. I think we'll agree on that, will we?
Yeah, but again, you know, so how, it's not... Well, obviously, it is the person, because they're going to have to do the same for Bubbles if he plays the same type. Somebody's going to have to do the same for TJ Reid, you know, whenever he's in these positions, or Joe Canning. I mean, all these players.
But Gleeson will have his hands full marking Noel McGrath and on his downtime picking up Bubbles.
he will, but I know, I think it would be a full-time job. You wouldn't. I don't think the quality of those players, Willie, you wouldn't just...
You'd never do it.
But look, if Jamie Barham takes up Noel McGrath could be trailed hearing Jamie Ballon around the field.
Yeah,
and, you know,
give him something to think about. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it's going. All right, so the, like I said, the bookies are Paddy Power, have that 2-5, 5-2. Who are you going for there?
I think Tipperary, momentum behind them, crowd behind them, and looking at the performance, I don't think they're the finished deal by any stretch. I think their defence will be put under pressure at some stage, but I think just the momentum behind them will get them over the line. But I think they won't be much in it.
Yeah, okay, we'll have to move through these ones a little bit quicker then. So we've Dublin Wexford in Parnell Park. That's at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Dublin are 4-5, slight favourites. Wexford 5-4. This is a 50-50 game for me between two teams who are slightly off the top teams and can't get enough scores to beat them. But they're very. These are two very, very evenly matched teams.
Yeah, no, it's a huge game actually for both of them, for different reasons. Wexford are playing away to Dublin. Their next game, if I'm stand corrected, I think it's away to Galway, and then they're at home to Carlow and I think Kilkenny. You know, so they can't wait until the last game home against Kilkenny to be sure that they're going to get through. Dublin, you know, played very well for a long period of the game last weekend, and look, it's in the Nell, as they call it in town here. You know, and they play very well. It's a very, very difficult place for other teams to play. They have a fantastic record here, yeah, against really, really good teams, not necessarily with this team, but going back a number of years. And you know, you'd expect them that they would, you know, build on what on 3/4 of the game last Saturday evening, and build on that and come out with a win. But Wexford needed it as well. And you know, sometimes, you know, there's counter argument that is play a game, you know, shake off the cobwebs and really go for the following Sunday. But then there's the counter argument where you're fresh coming into the game and you can come in with something new and that, you know. Yeah. So look, it's a difficult one to call. I think the fact that it's in Parnell is a major bearing. They're very, very difficult to beat there, and they have to win as well. And I think they'll sneak it. I do think for them to develop, though, they just need to get, you know, easier scores. You know, you just think for a minute of the and I'm not necessarily talking about the role that Bubbles plays or Tony Kelly plays, but the ability of some of those players to be able to score in very, 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 very tight conditions is what Dublin are missing a little bit. They're very industrious, we're a really, really good system, good management team, but just being able to score in tight situations to get themselves over the line, and they're going to have to figure that out.
Yeah, well, they'll have the answer of what to do. I don't think they played a sweeper at all against Kilkenny, which might have been a surprise. Sean Moran went across onto Mernan, I think. Adrian Moran there, I think he did at the start of the game. But Wexford, yeah, will give them the sweeper, so Moran will have his free roll that he really likes.
I think they do. It may not be the sweeper, like, you know, my definition of the sweeper, that his starting position is off of the D, so he's facing the ball, whereas Sean Moran, a lot of the time, is coming back into the play, and you know, he's sort of an extra distributor rather than a sweeper, I suppose. But anyway, I know, look, you're right, it's probably going to be forced on them anyway, so both teams are going to be well used to playing it.
Yeah, okay, so you fancy Dublin here. I fancy Dublin. I'm going to stick with them. I fancied them last week. Me and Michael Carton were wrong and you were right, Cheddar. Michael Carton hasn't been seen since that big confident prediction for Dublin to beat Kilkenny away. I fell into the trap and went along with him. Who are you going to go for there? I'm going to stick with Dublin. I think the game last week will stand to them, and Parnell Park will stand to them again. When it's a 50-50 game, those two things might tilt it in there.
That's how I would see it as well, Willie, yes.
Okay, great stuff. Carlow 12-1 against Kilkenny, who are 1-50. No disrespect to Carlow, but the handicap here is 11. They were so good against Galway away, only 6 points in it. We can't see them beating Kilkenny, can we? But we can see them beating the 11, maybe?
I know, can't see them beating Kilkenny. Look, Carlow's only up the road from Kilkenny, really. It's nearly a home game for Kilkenny. But again, Carlow are very, very difficult to break down in Carlow, and there's a real spirit about them at the minute, you know, and very good management team, a good panel with some good players to come into the field and that. And, you know, obviously a good system of play. To go to Salt Hill, I don't care if Galway took their eye off the ball. This is twice in the same year. To go to Galway and to put it up to them.
It's massive. In the championship
is,
now.
Yes,
this is
yes,
no
is.
League game. This
no,
is
I absolutely agree with you. Yeah. No, I thought it was a brilliant performance, and you just simply love to see them build on that and push on. Now look,
like, I just cut you off there. I couldn't see Westmeath, Offaly or Laois going and getting within 6 of Galway in the championship. Could you? Are Carlow gonna have taken a step on those three counties?
No, look, they have. I said that last year, Willie, that they have. Yes. Now, whether they can step up then to the next level is a sort of a different discussion, really. It's more to do with looking at the, you know, the long-term view of the development of hurling in Carlow and that. And, you know, I'm just going to make this comment here because I'm constantly beating this drum and I don't want to be in that space all of the time. But here is a county that have worked really hard. This team didn't, they weren't just bought in or they didn't just fall off the shelf. This is a development coming up through minors and under-21s. They've had three or four good years of under-21s. So somebody in Carlow has worked really hard at developing their team and put them in the position that they're in. Is now not the time for somebody to say, look, let's really get behind this and make sure that it's sustained for 20 years? Because if it isn't, it's more than likely that it'll just fly by.
It's a flash in the pan.
It'll be a flash in the pan. Look, we've seen it so many times, I suppose, we're just basing it on that. But look, fair credit to them. And, I can guarantee you there's nobody, no Kilkenny person will be taking this easy next weekend. They'll be dead serious about this.
Yeah, exactly right. We'll go for Kilkenny in that one. Last one then is Westmeath and Offaly. This is in Cusack Park. We haven't seen Westmeath yet in the Joe McDonagh, but they are league champions. Offaly are in serious, serious problems here, Cheddar. This is 5-6 Westmeath. Offaly are 6-5 outsiders. Offaly lose this, and not only to follow on the embarrassment of going into the Joe McDonagh, the embarrassment of getting relegated from the league, they might not even make the Joe McDonagh Cup final if they lose two in a row.
Yeah, no, it is a massive, massive game for Offaly. We've spoken about him a number of times, Woolley, over the last year and that.
It's hard to find new things to say about Offaly, isn't it?
Look, somebody said you are where you are, and you've got to just recognise where you are and fight to move up. I just think there was a spirit in them last weekend that if they bring it into Mullingar, and Mullingar is like Parnell, these are just difficult places to play. Westmeath play well. Remember they've beaten Kilkenny in under-21 championship hurling in Mullingar.
It's a terrible pitch. There's a Dunstores one end, and you don't know whether you're coming or going or how far you're out from the goals. It's right on top of the goals.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult place
and
to play.
And there's apartments then down the other side, which gives you a completely different view of where the fecking goals are.
Yeah, and look, more than anything else, it should be the same for all players. But Westmeath do seem to play well there, and they get the crowd behind them there. And they've beaten Offaly. I was at the game 2 or 3 years ago that they beat Offaly in Championship in Mullingar. But I just think that, if they get enough ball into Joe Bergen and Oisín Kelly and Shane, having said that, I'm going to talk against myself here, because Westmeath probably have the best full back in hurling at the moment in Tommy, and so maybe he might hold Joe Bergen if he does Westmeath a big way there.
See, that's the thing, but it has to be good ball into them, because the information I'm getting is that they were just boomers, and you're not going to be getting much joy if you're consistently doing that, right?
They were, but I think, if the three of them are in there, they're still a handful. Well, I'll put it this way to you, I'd rather get a lot of ball into them, because they have a good air game. Joe Bergen, Oisín Kelly and Shane, and Conor Mann was in there for a bit at the time as well. They're very, very strong in the air. So I just think that Offaly will sneak out of there. They just know the importance of this match. They've had a match last weekend. It's hard to know the psychological impact of losing to Leash in the first round and knowing that, I'm sort of under the defensive already. It's hard to know how that affects some teams. And some teams have the experience and maturity to be able to just take it on the chin and move on again the next weekend and give it their all. Other teams, they buckle a little bit under that type of pressure. But I just think that Offaly, I'm going to go for Offaly in this game. I just think that they know the importance of the occasion, long term as well as short term, and that they're just going to give it everything they have. And I think that might see them over the line.
Okay, we'll disagree on this one, Cheddar. For what it's worth, I'll go for Westmeath because of the Dunstores and the apartments at the other end. All right, great stuff, Cheddar. We'll be back with Joe from Paddy Power next. All right, Joe, we're going to start with my accumulator. And now let's just say the Samaritans are not rolling in dough after last week, unfortunately. 1 out of 4 got destroyed on Dublin, got destroyed on Cork. And what was the other one I got wrong? I can't think right now.
Yeah, there was so many wrong. I'm not sure which ones there were anymore. Look, there was no beginner's luck for you, but sure, we'll give you plenty of chances over the summer anyway.
Anyway, so this week, my 4... team accumulator is Dublin. I'm sticking with Dublin. I'm not going to abandon them yet. Leash to beat Antrim, Dublin obviously beat Wexford, Tipperary to beat Waterford at home, and Limerick to beat Cork at home, even though Cheddar has kind of changed my mind a little bit on that, but I'm going to stick with Limerick. So that was 5-1, and Paddy Power have put it?
Yeah, I just put it at the 6-1 for you there, Colin. We're always trying to find you a little bit extra value and a bit of boost on your odds, so that's applicable to anyone who wants to take you up on that as well. That's on the site.
Okay, great. So like, I mean, you'll know that after getting washed out last week, I've gone for all favourites just to win. So I'm not
no messing around.
5-1 shot, no more messing around. Right, what's John Milan got for us this week?
Yeah, John's got a few more tips or a few more bets in this week again. So what he's looking at in just the win column, he's got Tipperary, Limerick, Kilkenny and Wexford all to win, which was 4-1, and we just pushed it out to 9-2 a little bit. It's similar enough to your own accumulator there as well, with just a couple of changes. He's also got one on the handicaps, so the handicaps across the four games: Limerick -2, Waterford +4, Kilkenny -11 and Wexford +1, which was 11-1, and that's just been pushed out to 12-1. And then finally on John, he likes to go for the long odds goal scorer bet. So one of the ones he has this weekend across the four hurling games is Jason Ford, Colin Fennelly, Aaron Galan and Rory O'Connor all to score a goal at any stage in the games this weekend. Was 33-1, and that's been pushed out to 40-1.
Okay, no chance of that coming. Here, a quick one now with John Milan. If he fancies Wexford to win, then Wexford will be -1, not +1.
Yeah, no? But he's just picking the handicap, like they're the set handicap.
Oh, that's so the set handicap.
Yeah, exactly.
Alright, okay, right, and this is a good one. Hashtag what odds Paddy.
Yeah, so obviously on social media you can hashtag what odds Paddy, and the lads in trading will get these priced up for us. So there's just one that I noticed there before it came in. It's John Bubbles O'Dwyer and Seamus Harnedy to score 10 points or more combined in their two games, and it includes goals at 13-2. So if last weekend's anything to go by, they should easily pass that by, and you'd fancy one of them to get on the goal scorers list as well.
Yeah, I like that one, to be honest. Like last week they would have scored 1-9 between them, so 7 and 1-2, so they would have been up to 12. Oh, that's a good, that's a fun bet, isn't
yeah,
it?
Exactly,
like, that's
yeah,
a bit different.
Keep you a bit interested, and it's 13-2 as well, so not bad.
Exactly. Right, so the matches on Sunday then. I've gone through the odds with Cheddar already. So Tipperary, Waterford, what do you think is a decent bet in this one?
Yeah, let's have a look at it there. I think Waterford are huge prices, I'm sure you've probably discussed. Like they really kind of have to win this weekend. They've got no other choice. If they're go two games down, they'd find it very difficult to get out of Munster. So one thing I just looked at there is Waterford to be leading at half time, at Tipperary to win the game at full time is 4-1. So you'd expect,
I like that.
You'd expect Waterford to absolutely hammer into them anyway, and Tipperary might be feeling their cocky selves after last weekend, and it could take them a while to get going. So that's one I'd keep an eye on at 4-1 there. And then kind of similarly to that, Tipperary to win the game overall and both teams to score a goal is even. So obviously Tip being 2-5 isn't much of a price. You'd expect both teams to probably bury one at some stage, and then Tip still to win is at evens there. And it wouldn't actually just look out on with Tip, obviously with their huge win last weekend, they're sort of the talk of the hurling world, and they seem to be back in form with Liam Sheedy at the helm. So for Tipperary to win Munster and the All-Ireland in 2019 is 15-2.
Okay, right. Okay, Cheddar says he wants to see more Tipperary before he's going to make judgments. He's not as excitable as I am, as you know. Right, Limerick and Cork, I've given the odds already in the last section. So what else are we looking at here?
One of the bets that we've talked about a few times before in tight games, we've either team to win by 1-4 or for it to be a draw, is at 10-11 there. Again, I mean, Limerick and Cork, they went to extra time in the semi-final last year. I know Cork have started the championship off fairly poorly, and Limerick seem to be in great form, but you don't know what they're going to come with yet, and they haven't had to meet anyone in the red hot heat of championship. So yeah, I think that could be a good bet in a tight game there. A couple other ones there with two of the best goalkeepers in the game in goals this weekend between Nash and Nicky Quaid. Their penalty be missed at 9-1. There was a lot of penalties dished out over the weekend, and they seem to be blowing fouls fairly easy. So if there is one to be given, I could see either of those keepers pulling off a good save at 9-1. Might be something to look out for.
Okay, so missed or saved is the same thing. So wider a save, there's no little small print on this, is there?
Oh, well, the only thing you'd have to be conscious of is over the bar isn't a miss.
Oh, it's not a miss?
No. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. All right, so that's an interesting one. Anything else on that one? There's a few Galan ones here. Galan anytime goal in Limerick to win 9-5 is a pretty good one.
Yeah, I think it's not bad at all there. I think, just Galan, he's been in flying form so far this year between Fitzgibbon and the league. He seems to be kind of the dominant forward in the game. And you think he's going to get a couple of chances at some stage anyway. And if Limerick are to win the match, you need him to be doing the business. So I think that might be one to look out for as well. And just on Galan, he's 15-2 currently for hurler of the year. Might be good to get on him before the championship starts, because if he pulls out another man on a match performance, they'll only shorten. So
yeah, okay, Carlo Kilkenny, pretty obvious based on the odds who you think's going to win this one, but there's more bets that you can make in this one.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Carlo, were the big moral victors over the weekend to a certain extent. I mean, obviously they still lost the game, but they put in a huge performance against Galway down there. And I think to beat the handicap again this week would be a good achievement. I know Kilkenny are bouncing off their good win against Dublin there, and it's a nice local rivalry, but there won't be any quarter asked or given, I think. So Carlo to beat that handicap again would be great, but obviously you're looking at Kilkenny to win the match realistically. So if you wanted to look at any other bets there, Kilkenny to score first, lead at half time and win is 4-6. TJ Reid anytime goal is 5-4. He got two last weekend, and then there's another little one that's on the site there. Kilkenny to be the highest scoring hurling team on Sunday is 9-4. So obviously there could be huge big scores put up over the weekend, but if Kilkenny are to really put Carlow to the sword, you think they'll run up a big enough score? Yeah. So 9-4, that could be one to see.
I like that one too. Yeah. They're good ones. That they should really, right? They should.
Yeah. You'd think that naturally that they should be able to rack up the biggest score, but you just never know how they'll go down. Carlow on a tight pitch there, and Dr. Cullen there, they might hammer into them and try keep it low scoring, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and Tip scored, what was it, 230 or something, 228 against Cork. Yeah. Okay, Dublin Wexford, this is the closest one probably of the weekend.
Yeah, it's a huge game I've seen in both teams' season, and it seems to be probably the closest to a toss of a coin we'll have this weekend at the moment. It's a tough one to call, I think, but Dublin just have to win. They've made Parnell Park somewhat of a fortress over the years. No hurling team likes going to play in Parnell. It's a very tight pitch. I know they didn't get over the line in a couple of the games last year, but I think they've been building and building, and really, I suppose, for Dublin hurling, they kind of have to win the game to a certain extent as well. I mean, if they were to lose this one, it's probably another Leinster Championship season gone. So one thing we've just looked at here is Dublin to be winning at half-time and full-time is 15-8, so you're nearly getting 2-1 there. And then I think it's going to be a tight game either way, but I do fancy Dublin to just about get the business done. So Dublin to win by 1-3 is 7-2. So again, it would just give you a bit more value on the odds there to get it over evens. It's over 3-1. Just from a Wexford perspective, I think Conor McDonald's probably most likely man to get on the goal scorers list this weekend. So him to score any time is 7-4, and for Conor to score the first goal of the game is 7-1.
Okay, great stuff, Joe. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no bother.
All right, we'll be back on Monday with a review show as usual. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.